welcome to the USEA's official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford. The topic of finding young horses to bring along to make the next star, the next four-star horse, or even an Olympic prospect is one that faces every event rider. And joining me today to discuss developing, training, producing young horses is Lauren Kiefer, who's been with Jackie Mars now for 9 years and produced many horses during that time. And she joins me now. Lauren, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, as I said, you've been there now 9 years and must have had quite a few very nice horses through your hands in that time and clearly have developed a system, Lauren. Let's talk a little bit about that because, as I said, finding the right horse is the first challenge of any event rider, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. You know, since I've been here, most of the ones I've dealt with have been homebreds, but you can certainly look for some qualities in the beginning that can help you figure out if they're going to be suitable long-term.
So when you started there at the farm 9 years ago, what were you walking into? Were they mainly homebreds, or did you have some other horses you had to find to bring on to get the system going?
Yeah, when I first came and was a working student for Karen and David, Karen and David had a few of their own homebreds that they bred every year. And then Ms. Mars also had some. And so Karen and David taught me kind of their system with it all from early on in that first few years. And then as the years went, they kind of let me loose on them. And a lot of it has to do, like, we do a lot of groundwork. And everything that goes on in eventing in any discipline, really, comes down to putting pressure on and releasing pressure. And so we start that very early.
So give us an example when you, we're talking about homebred horses here now, so that you have them from foals, you start imprinting them at the very earliest opportunity. Give us some idea when you come into the equation then as the rider trainer, Lauren.
I really only kind of, you know, we've got Sue Clark does most of the work with the foals, and she does a great job of getting them, there's very hands-on with them from the beginning, and then I really come in, you know, when they're 3 years old, if they're a little bit when they're two, I mess with them a little, but really when they're three is when I step in with them, and we do a lot of stuff, you know, on the rope, we do a lot of putting groundwork with them. And we do a lot of desensitizing. We do a ton of work on the ground with them so that when we get on, they really kind of already know all the aids that we need at the time. And we, you know, we actually don't end up putting a bridle on them until quite a ways down the road. We like to teach them to yield the pressure from our legs and even kind of a stick against their neck. And we use a rope to stop them around their neck. And then from there, they learn to, you know, if you put pressure on, they should move away from it. And when it comes off, then, you know, when you move away from it, the pressure gets to release. And then that translates into everything. And, you know, once you put a bit in their mouth and all of that.
So give us an example then. You talked about the rope exercises that you do with them. Do you have a head collar on them at that time? What other tack do you have on them?
We start off, we have a rope halter, and we use a rope halter because it's got little knots that are kind of pressure point areas, and so that way, you know, a big leather halter doesn't really put much pressure on, and we, you know, we certainly don't like to get into chain shanks or anything like that. So we use a rope halter so that when they go against it, it does create kind of pressure for them, and then when they give to that pressure, it's quite soft. And so that, you know, is the very first thing we, you know, the first thing we teach them is we like to call it the four yields. And the first is backing up. And then if we put a hand on top of their head goes down. And then we call it the front end yield and hind end yield, where we push their quarters around and push their shoulders around. And we do all that on the ground. And then once they know those four yields, you can send them out lunging or whatever else, and still have a line of communication.
So do you have them loose in a school then to do this, or are you holding their head all the time, or are they loose but with that rope halter on?
No, once you've taught them the four yields, then we let them loose in a round pen. both in Florida and in Virginia, we have beautiful round pens to work in. And so once they know those, you know, have those, that line of communication, then we set them free in the round pen. And then, you know, with that, they, you know, we can make them turn around. We can teach them to go left, right, up, any of it. And then we start getting into stuff, desensitizing them. You know, when we start introducing them to the saddle and stuff, we do a whole lot of slapping blankets around them, you know, chucking the tack on them. You want to make them as used to all that kind of flapping, noising, hopping around while you're on the ground, so that once you're on them, you know, a stirrup flapping doesn't set them off or something.
So at what point do you start lunging?
We don't really do lunging. You know, we work on the, you know, it's kind of like a 12-foot rope, but, you know, we use the round pin a bit, but we really don't do a ton of lunging. And, you know, a lot of programs do. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just not the road we go down.
So no lunging, but what about long reining, the good old-fashioned long reining? Do you do that at all?
Not really. You know, it's just not the program we've had. And, like, obviously, everyone's program works in different ways, and there's a lot of successful ways to do it. But we really don't get into long reining and stuff. And, you know, they start going in on the bit. Once we put the bridle on, you know, we play around with them going on the bit and stuff. But we prefer to do that from the saddle than rather on the ground.
So at what point then, you've had them in the round pen, you've got them desensitized, working, you know, responding, obviously, up to a standard that you're happy with, you know, with the stick on them, with the rope. At what point then do you actually put a bit in their mouth and a saddle on their back?
We'll put a saddle on their back quite early, and then we spend a lot of time riding around with the saddle and just the rope halter on. We'll actually ride them around for quite a while with a bridle on under the rope halter, just no rein, because, you know, with any of the young horses, it takes a long time to just stop playing with the bit. And so, you know, we've found it doesn't help us much to try to teach them how to respond to the bit when they're still messing around with it in their mouth. So we'll spend, you know, several weeks with just the bridle on but not actually using the rein. We'll keep the rope halter on, and we'll have them cantering, you know, logs and over small courses and stuff without using the bit yet. And then we actually start using the bit and reins, putting that into play later on the most.
What kind of bit would you put in their mouth to mouth them then at the outset, Lauren?
Just a snaffle. You know, every horse's mouth is shaped a bit different. So we'll play around with whether it's a fat snaffle or a thinner snaffle, or a snaffle with a link in the middle or not. You know, if one, and every horse prefers something different, and they all have different shaped mouths and roofs of their mouths and tongues. So, you know, if one seems really uncomfortable with a fat snaffle, you know, we'll switch to one with the link in the middle of it until we find what they are most comfortable with, and then we'll stick with that. But we try to leave them as snaffles for as long as possible.
Right, so then the saddle goes on fairly quickly as well. How long a process is that before someone actually gets on their back, typically?
It really depends on the horse. You know, I've had some horses that we introduce the saddle and we introduce it, someone bellying them within the one day. And then there's some horses that, you know, it takes a week of throwing the saddle on. You know, we try to let them tell us. But basically, you know, we'll throw the saddle on. We'll slap the stirrups around, we'll pat the saddle, we'll jump around them, we'll jump up and down against the saddle and lay over it. And, you know, as long as they take all of that in stride, we just kind of keep adding a step at a time.
And would you always be the first jockey to get on them then at that backing stage, Lauren?
It's me and another girl here, Jess Brumfield, who is our assistant rider. And between the two of us, you know, one of us is always on the ground and one of us does the bellying, and, you know, we kind of go back and forth. It's definitely kind of a two-person thing. You kind of always, when you belly them, you just want someone on the ground that can be there to hold their head.
Right. So all this is done in the safety of the round pen?
Yes.
Okay, so take us to the next stage then. Once you're confident mm-hmm. that they're going forward, they're responsive, and you feel you're confident enough that they are able to go out of the round pen, then what next?
We use a good quiet horse, and we'll pony them around the farm and all over the place, and maybe even pony them around at shows and stuff with or without someone on their back. But we found that it helps a lot to have an older horse with them to make it all seem easy and lets them know that it's a day-to-day thing. And then once they're good about that, you know, we start just adding rails on the ground, playing in the dressage ring, cantering over logs, all that.
So this is a three-year-old in the fall of their third year or the spring of their fourth year?
Yeah, like we won't do really any jumping or anything until, you know, like our three-year-olds, they're coming four now, that have technically, I guess, turned four now. Like they're just starting to do a little bit of jumping in the round pen, and we're trotting over rails and stuff and have trotted over some logs and stuff out in the field. But, you know, we typically... What I try to do is mess with them a little bit at the end of their two-year-old year, just do a little bit of the four-year-olds and turning them on the rope. And then in the summer of their three-year-old year, we get them accustomed to saddle and belly them and everything and get them backed. And then we chuck them back out in the field until we get down to Florida, and then we start taking them around the farm and riding them properly.
So this time of year then is a busy time for you because you've got the three-year-old yes. and the four-year-olds. How many do you yes. have currently that are you're bringing along as four-year-olds?
We have three.
Okay, so what's a typical day for them now? I'm presuming they're rideable, they're going forwards, you're happy hacking around the farm. What else are you building into their program at this point?
You know, being down here next to Longwood is great because they have a bunch of schooling shows that happen and stuff, so we'll use those opportunities to take them over, make them get around the hustle and bustle and get used to shows. We've thrown them on the trailer a couple of times when the other horses have been competing. Like, we have a group of horses competing at Rocking Horse this weekend, and we'll throw one or two of the three-year-olds on the trailer just to hang out. You know, we try to get all of the experiences of a show done before they actually compete so that they're not being thrown into an entirely new environment and have to perform on the same day.
And I know obviously each horse is different, Lauren, but typically when would you ask them to stay within the confines of a dressage arena? And
we'll play around with that quite early. You know, we'll walk them around in it, you know, have a little trot around in it and stuff. And funnily enough, the hardest thing about the dressage ring is if you have a very big, unbalanced 3 or 4 year old, is the cantering, because then it starts feeling like a small space. But we try to get them in and around it and playing around in it quite early so that it's not such a new thing to them. You know, we want the dressage ring to be a normal place, not something that we only do occasionally.
So, of course, the next big step is deciding when they're ready for their first competition. And mm-hmm. is that a decision that you make alone, or is that a team decision?
You know, it's a team decision. You know, it's pretty obvious when they're ready. And the first show is always just kind of a see-what-you-have scenario. But we'll take them to some schooling shows and low-pressure things. And, you know, you always do something quite small first, a beginner novice or an entry, so that, you know, you can trot stuff, you can play around low-pressure environment. But, you know, it just depends. Some horses, you know, we've had some that do their first beginner novice in February, and we've had some that don't do their first beginner novice till June and July, depending on how quickly they advance. And we actually, if they're the bigger they are, the slower we try to go with them, because they aren't as well formed yet as the younger, as the smaller horses.
Right. So if you had to advise anybody on what you're looking for is the qualities of those young horses leading up to 4 years of age when they actually start to compete, you've done your assessment of what their qualities are. How would you evaluate them, Lauren?
To me, nearly the most important thing to me is their trainability. You know, I want a horse that is interested in learning and that, you know, if they see something, there's, you know, a new element, a log on the ground or whatever, that they want to walk up and look at it, and not that they want to turn and run away. You know, you want, for eventing, we need horses that like to solve problems. Because at the end of the day, we have to do three phases, and cross-country is solving problems. And so you want a horse that's a thinker, that wants to learn. You don't want something that turns and runs away from stuff. And saying that, you know, I've had horses that seem incredibly spooky as three-year-olds end up being wonderful eventers. And it's always a changing game, but being the scopiest, fanciest horse doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a four-star horse. At the end of the day, they have to have the trainability in the brain.
And that inquiring mind, as you say, when you're going across country with them, but when you take them out on the farm and you're making them be the ones that are in front, because obviously ponying gives them confidence, mm-hmm. but then they have to go on their own. And it's that point that the horse is going to tell you really what he's about, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, we actually, when we started introducing the cross country stuff, we do a lot of it online on the rope, as I say. Like, we'll introduce them to banks, to water, to the ditches. And that really kind of, it takes out the element of the rider making them do anything. You're still pointing them in the direction to go, but you're not dictating their movements. And so they really then start to learn how to problem solve. And you really kind of start to see what kind of thinker a horse is. And you'd be amazed at how much they become. They start looking for stuff. They, you know, we'll teach them to jump banks and stuff on the rope, and then all of a sudden they'll start looking for the next jump. And it's amazing how much, when you take away a rider's interference, how much they'll start thinking on their own, which we really like to encourage, because, you know, we all get into a situation cross country where we're not at our most available to steer or whatever else, and it's nice if a horse can think on its own.
So obviously that teaches them to be balanced as well as be independent thinkers.
Absolutely.
So that when you say that rope, it's just a long rope, like a lunge line, then that you just...
Yeah, it's really just kind of like a 12-foot mariner's rope. You know, there are some, you know, like David's very good on it, and he could do work with horses on a 20-foot rope, but most of us end up getting tangled up and falling down. But just a 12-foot rope, and, you know, they start jumping up and down banks, and you can put together a couple of stuff. It takes some coordination, but for us, long-term, it really creates a problem-solving horse that can think on its own feet and pays attention to its own feet. Because at the end of the day, if we're riding them and teaching them to jump up a bank, like, of course, we don't want to fall down, so we start dictating their movements. Whereas if you have them on a rope, they have to pay attention to their own feet. And they all trip up a bank their first few times. But at least this way, they're learning how to fix it rather than just counting on us to tell them when to get their legs out of the way.
Well, you mentioned right at the start how important the groundwork is. And obviously, you're doing all of those things in terms of their training on the ground. But there's also the work in the barn, isn't there? And all the handling, how important that is to the discipline, Lauren.
Absolutely. And, you know, all of our girls in the barn, they are all very good at working with the horses on the ground. And, you know, all these young horses will stand in the aisle quietly on the cross ties and not move their feet and move over when you walk by. And it translates so much into the riding that they have to move, you know, they have to move away from pressure. And at the same time, the people that work out with them have to be good enough to release the pressure when they move away. And that's when horses learn to be quiet, respectful, and they like that. Like, horses like having a leader, and they want someone to be in charge. They don't want to run willy-nilly around. And so when they have that kind of discipline and routine, they get calm and relaxation from that.
Well, you talked about the respect there, and we often see horses that are untrained. You walk into their stall, and they don't move away from you. They crowd your space. They just basically become very rude. So that's really important to establish that respect from them, that they move away when you ask them to, and respect your space too. So that's a major message,
isn't it, on
the ground.
And it translates to once you're on the back. You have a horse that's rude on the ground, it's not going to be not rude when you're on its back.
Right.
You know, it all translates.
absolutely. Well, critically important, all aspects of the training. So you've got the bunch of four-year-olds now that are ready to go, and you'll decide then on all of these young horses coming up through the ranks then at what point they move up the ranks then as well, do you? I mean, is that your decision?
Yeah, and we're very conservative in it. You know, it's very important, and especially as more warm blood is bred into these event horses, that they're allowed to finish growing and everything. And so you have to kind of decide as you go, like, how much you run them. You know, if we have a big warm-blooded four-year-old, then it may only do a couple events this year and spend a lot of time just hacking about and finishing growing, because we want them to last for a long time. You know, it's not important to us how quickly they get up the levels as much as how long they'll stay at the up at the levels.
Right.
So we try to be really careful with that. And, you know, that it's almost the hardest thing, because especially if they're going well, you want to kind of crack on with it. But we certainly try not to, just as a game plan, they'll stay at novice their four-year-old year, or they'll stay at training their five-year-old year, prelim at their six-year-old year, so on and so forth. And, you know, we try to stick to kind of that program. Obviously, every horse is an individual. Some may need to spend several years at training or whatever else, but we do try to stay at least that slow.
So how many horses do you have in total that you'll be competing with this season, Lauren?
You put me on the spot. I'm not quite sure. You know, we've probably got, between Jess and I, Jess competes several of the young horses also. So between the two of us, we've got 12 or so, maybe a couple more than that.
And of those young horses that you're bringing up right now, are there any there that you're looking at and thinking, gosh, this really is four-star potential? This is possibly a team horse for me.
Yes, there's actually several. And Miss Mars' breeding program keeps producing, you know, more and more quality. And the neat thing is actually several of these horses that are showing a lot of potential for the future are actually coming out of kind of her first generation of homebreds. Several of their mothers are actually original homebreds also. So, you know, the quality is getting better and better, and we kind of need more of that vision for American breeding. And it's hard. Like, you have to be dedicated to it for generations. It's certainly not a short-term thing. And, you know, that it takes a big support crew, and it takes a lot of people with the vision for decades into the future, not just a few years into the future, to carry out that kind of level of breeding.
So when you look at all of the tasks that you have as a trainer of the young horse, producer of the young horses, and as the rider, which elements of those tasks do you most enjoy, Lauren?
I love them all. You know, I really, really like having the horses from the beginning. Like, I've had both. I've had horses that have been trained by other people and I've taken them on later, and I've had horses that most of my horses I've taken from the start. And I really enjoy having them from the start. You know, they're yours from the beginning. All the buttons on them are yours. You know, whatever baggage you've given them is yours. But, you know, there's something very special when you jump around an advanced on a horse that you've had from the very beginning. And, it's just as special on a horse you've had from the beginning, jumping, you know, all the little landmarks are so big, you know, their first training, their first prelim, their first FEI event. Like, it's very special when you've started them and been with them since they were babies. And especially with this group, it becomes such a big deal, because you have Sue Clark that, you know, bred them and birthed them, and Miss Mars that was with them, and, you know, the people in the barn that raised them, and it becomes such a team effort and a family effort.
So you become very maternal then as you watch your offspring grow up and leave school.
Well, with horses anyway. I don't know if I'm maternal about anything else.
obviously a very successful program, Lauren. Thanks very much for coming on the show, and the best of luck to you this season.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
This podcast is available on iTunes and also at usea.podbean.com. For more information about the USEA, please visit the website at useventing.com.